So far, we've dwelled on many of the downsides of social media, but there are also many positives, and University of Vermont statistician Chris Danforth is developing computer algorithms that he says can spot people with depression just by looking at the content and compositions of photographs that they're posting onto the social media platform Instagram. In tests, he's achieving up to a 70% pickup rate. Georgia had this report.
It's my lunch break and I've come to walk around Mattingley Hall Gardens, as it's a very nice view, even though it's slightly cold. And the hall is looking very magnificent in the winter sunlight. So I'm going to take a photo. What's the point of taking a photo if I'm the only one who sees it? So I better put it on all my social media accounts so all my friends know exactly what I'm doing. But am I giving away more than just what I'm up to?
There have been a number of studies in the last few years looking at aspects of our behavior that we reveal through social media. In particular, studies that we've been involved in have been looking at trying to assess someone's mental health from aspects of images they post to Instagram and messages they write on Twitter.
And how have you looked into this?
What we did was recruit individuals who had been diagnosed with depression by a psychiatrist and were active on social media at the time. And we asked them for access to their social media feed. So we compared pictures they took with pictures taken by a control group who had not been diagnosed with depression. What we found was that individuals who had been diagnosed with depression, their pictures tended to be bluer and darker and grayer. They tended to have less faces in them. And these results are consistent with what psychiatrists know about how depression affects people. It literally causes them to see the world with less color in it, and you know, they spend less time in large groups of people and social interactions. And so while those findings weren't particularly surprising, what's really exciting about that particular study from our perspective is that when we restricted our computer model to only have access to pictures posted by people prior to the date that they were formally diagnosed, it still picked up on these differences. And that's an indication that we could be able to get individuals who are suffering from depression in front of a doctor sooner.
Oh, wow. So you could sort of quantify these pointers, like having blacker and bluer pictures. And these things appeared before people had actually got a clinical diagnosis.
That's right. Yes. And it's, you know, the results, they're consistent with what people are finding looking at other sources of social media as well. So we looked in a separate study at depression and PTSD and identified predictors of those health states from words that people were using on Twitter and their behavior, sort of the frequency of their posts, how likely they were to include links in their posts. And there were indicators that there were differences well prior to the date that they were formally diagnosed. And so I think that the results of our study are promising, but they're really just a proof of concept. There's a small group of a few hundred people in each of these studies. And it's not clear that this would translate to sort of the average person using Instagram or Twitter. But the goal is to try and figure out how to leverage all of the information that we give our mobile phone about us, our tone of voice, the words we use, the people we communicate with. This sort of data, it's incredibly private. So if we can protect it, but yet at the same time give algorithms access to information that's predictive about our health state, we could be, you know, connecting with our doctor sooner, for example. The doctors could have access to a lot more information than they would get from a typical, you know, yearly checkup interview.
And do you see this being used by the social media companies themselves?
So certainly companies know a lot about you, even if you're not using it, just from what your friends are doing on the site. And I do expect that they're going to be situations where social media companies are selling advertising spots for people who are suffering from mental health problems, potentially without even intending to or realizing that they're doing so. So that's something that I think is really important right now, is that we start having a conversation with each other about how to protect this sort of data. This particular study was done by a few people with limited resources, but certainly if we could do it, then you know, a company like Instagram or Facebook or Twitter, they could use this data to try and make money. And we'd like for them to use it to try and help us be happier and healthier.
I suppose that is a worry. People would be worried about their privacy, that people could see that they're depressed before maybe they know themselves.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we reveal a lot more about ourselves online with our sort of digital footprint than, you know, than we're aware of. And, you know, part of doing research studies like this and getting communicating the results of the studies to people is to help educate the population about what it is that they need to be aware of when they're on the internet.
And is there a way the social media companies could use this information for good?
Sure. So, you know, certainly Facebook and Instagram are active in trying to provide mental health resources to people who, for example, search for the word depression or use words that have been seen to be predictive of self-harm. They have teams working on trying to get individuals who are suffering from those problems access to people sooner. And that's a combination of artificial intelligence and actual people who are then called in to virtually try and address whatever's going on and maybe potentially dispatch, you know, police officers to attempt to rescue someone. And so companies are working on that sort of thing. You know, stepping back to the sort of the picture of public health, there are a number of other studies, some of which we've done, showing that things that you might like to quantify about how well a city or a society are functioning, you know, those things can be inferred from the words that are used. If you look at particular geographic areas, we've shown, for example, that population scale health rankings, like, you know, the percentage of people who are obese or who suffer from diabetes, those things can be inferred from just the words that people use on Twitter. You know, well-being surveys that are done by Gallup can be inferred without asking any questions, simply by seeing how often people use happy and sad words in different states, for example, in the U.S. And so there are going to be applications for this sort of public health instrument building that people are going to develop.
So social media can be a force for good and bad, depending on how you use it. What's clear is it is a force to be reckoned with. Thanks to Chris Danforth and to all our other guests this week. That's Daria Kuss, Sander van der Linden and Philip Powell.